Welcome everyone to Mentes Sin Fronteras. Today we have Talia Gutierrez, who is joining us all the way from Collier County, and she is a public school educator who's going to be talking with us about how to support your child with ADHD in the classroom.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Amanda.
Welcome, Talia.
Hi.
So today we want to get to know you and we want to get to know how to support children in the classroom. So let's kind of first talk about like where you're from and how you became an educator.
I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. My grandparents immigrated to California at first. There was not enough jobs. They ended up going to Wisconsin due to the amount of factories that were there and higher paying jobs. I come from a family of educators. Mm-hmm. So my mom was a bio middle school teacher. Okay. And then she worked her way up, and she is a CEO of a United Community Center that predominantly helps Hispanic communities. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different types of outreaches that her building offers to help her community in Milwaukee. And so that's how I became introduced to the teaching world. Wow. Was through her.
That's super impressive. Mm-hmm. So your grandparents came from Mexico, ended up in Wisconsin.
Yes.
So what was that like for you to kind of grow up in Wisconsin, you know, as an American Mexican woman?
You know, I had a lot of identity issues, you know, because at home you hear Spanish, you're eating different types of foods. And then when you go to school, you kind of feel like you don't have a place. And I grew up in an area where I was the only Hispanic. And so it was really hard for me to find similarities in the people that I was around. And I kind of didn't like being Hispanic because my peers thought I was very different, if that makes sense. And then as I got older and became more comfortable with who I am, I started to really accept it and really embrace my culture. Mm-hmm. And learn it and become better with my language, which is Spanish. Mm-hmm.
So you guys were speaking Spanish at home?
Yes.
And then English everywhere else?
Yes.
And were there a lot of Hispanics where you grew up?
No, we were okay. The only ones.
Okay. Yeah. So I can definitely see how that would be hard, right? Especially as a young kid where we're trying to figure out our identity and build our self-esteem, and it doesn't mm-hmm. really help if people are being mean to you for the food that you eat, or maybe you have an accent or certain words that you use. So how did you kind of navigate that, like in elementary school?
So I, at first, before we had moved out to like the suburbs, we grew up in Milwaukee. And so my parents actually put us in a Spanish immersion school. So half my day was in Spanish and then half my day was in English. When we had moved out of the city and we went to the suburbs, my school actually had a hard time educating me. Mm-hmm. So because I looked different, I actually had to get an ESOL entrance exam. And I remember as a kid, when I'm first going to this new school, I was like, why are they testing me on like what a scissor was? Like if I could say the word like scissors, or like if I knew what this was. And it was because they have never dealt with someone who was a different ethnicity than what they're used to. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of testing, a lot of, we don't know if she can do this, because, you know, I was still struggling with, okay, I was reading in Spanish my entire mm-hmm. elementary. I had moved to the suburbs in fourth grade. Wow. And so academically, when it came to reading in English, I was very behind. Mm-hmm. And it was like a struggle for me, because, you know, as a kid, you compare yourself to your peers. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I was like, why am I not able to catch on as quick as mm-hmm. the people around me? So school was a very difficult place for me. Mm-hmm. Which is why I think that geared me to go towards education and to make that difference mm-hmm. that I wasn't able to have as a child.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And being pulled out of class for, you know, the ESOL program, mm-hmm. I had the same experience, like being bilingual. And bilingual children, even trilingual children, they actually, and you people probably explain this better than me, there's almost like a gap in that education realm mm-hmm. where they're behind for a certain period of time and then they excel.
Right.
So
right.
Do you see that in your own classroom?
Yeah, in my experience, when I do have kids that come from other countries like Cuba, Puerto Rico, Mexico, Colombia, they are very quiet. Mm-hmm. And what is amazing about Florida and their schools is that there is always a student who can speak their native language. Mm-hmm. And that helps the child thrive in the classroom environment, because as for me, it was so difficult even adjusting to an all English day. Mm. I could not imagine for the elementary kids who come in not knowing any English and their whole instruction is in English. Right. And it's extremely difficult for them. So in the classroom, what I would usually do is I will place them next to someone who can speak their language, which would be Spanish, and they end up thriving mid-year. So there's like that gap, you know, we translate. Thank goodness a lot of our educational programs do have the dual language of Spanish, English, and even Creole. And we have them perform that, and then they'll start getting comfortable saying, can I go to the bathroom? Can I go get some water? And then before I know it, they're speaking on full English. Mm-hmm.
So you really make it a point to have an inclusive classroom for your children.
Yes.
And going back to your childhood, you mentioned, you know, some self-esteem issues, right? And trying to figure out who you are in a community that is not super inclusive like Florida. So how did that kind of go into your ADHD diagnosis?
So being pulled out of the room is never fun. And that was before, I mean, education from when I was growing up is very different now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, right away, being pulled out, you're already different, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, so I'm already a struggle reader. And now I can't focus. Like I can't get simple tasks done. So I would realize I would dissociate, mm-hmm. and I would try to pay attention so hard. And then a student behind me would do something that would just completely mess up my whole entire like concentration focus. And then I would be completely lost in my day. And then that would just, it would be like a ripple effect, like a tapping pencil. And then, okay, I can get back on task. And then, wait, but I don't know how to do this. And then you could see the teacher get frustrated because they had just explained it. Mm-hmm. And so then as a kid, you're like, okay, that's my fault. I should have paid attention rather than being helped and like re-explaining and being a little more patient. So that was very difficult for me. And then again, with the ADHD, I was diagnosed very late. I was going into high school. Mm-hmm. So I thought what I was going through in elementary school was very normal, like not being able to focus, getting distracted by the stimuli around me and behind me. So I thought that was normal. Mm-hmm. And then as I was going through high school and I was learning about ways to better cope with ADHD and other things that my parents were trying to do, I realized that it wasn't normal. So switching my focus to, okay, what is distracting me? How could I get rid of the things to perform better for myself? And mm-hmm. this is gonna follow me until I go into my career. I need to be able to get a handle of this. And so it was a lot of trial and error, and it was a very frustrating process, I might add, mm-hmm. as I'm going through high school and college.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how did you end up getting diagnosed with ADHD? Did you get diagnosed by a therapist, psychiatrist?
I actually had to go take an 8-hour psychology test. Okay. My mom, who's an educator, mm-hmm. she was very active in my education. So I remember in fourth grade, the principal was like, she might not be able to go to college. And my mom was not very happy with that. So she took it upon herself to take me to a psychologist. It was an 8-hour test. It was so long. And it was like it was a bunch of different stuff. It was like putting puzzle pieces together, making sentences, like filling in the blank, some math questions, kind of hit all of the things. And they actually had, from what my mom told me as I grew up, that they had to have multiple psychologists look at my results because I would score very high in some things, and then I would score very, very low in other mm-hmm. things. So not only did I have ADHD, but then I was also diagnosed with nonverbal learning disability too. But had my mom not been so proactive, mm-hmm. we would have never been able to mm-hmm. know that diagnosis and then be able to work throughout high school with that, like what works, what doesn't work, mm-hmm. and things like that to be successful in college. Mm-hmm. So
Mm-hmm. And once you had that support, did you feel your self-esteem increase and start to solidify your identity?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, as you get older, you realize, oh, you know, a lot of other peers my age, a lot of other adults had similar issues. Mm-hmm. But as a child, you really don't notice that. Mm-hmm. And so as I got older, meeting friends, I'm like, okay, that was a very normal process. Mm-hmm. My parents were very supportive, got me tutors. My mom would make me read out loud, ask me comprehension questions. And I feel like if it wasn't for my parents' support, I would have not been able to succeed the amount I did in the last 4 years right. in my education with the two diagnoses of ADHD and non-verbal learning disability.
Right.
And I think it's super important how you brought up how it impacted your self-esteem, because as a therapist, when I'm seeing kids and even adults with undiagnosed ADHD or recently diagnosed, mm-hmm. it impacts their self-esteem in such a negative way, because like you said, that was your normal and you were struggling.
Right.
And especially in our community as Hispanics, there is that stigma. You know, of my child doesn't have ADHD, right? Like, no, I'm not going to acknowledge that. I'm not going to take them to therapy. And what ends up happening is it's that ripple effect, right? Of not getting the proper support in school. And then we start to see some comorbidity, right? Some dual diagnoses of depression and anxiety mm-hmm. because of the undiagnosed ADHD. Mm-hmm. So how your parents were there to support you is super important. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit how you ended up becoming an educator.
You know, I love kids. I at first worked as a CPS, Child and Protective Services. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make a difference. That job was very difficult. And I kind of wanted a better relationship with children, because as a child protective worker, you're there at like the lowest point of a child's life. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't good news. You know, their homes, they were displaced from their homes. So my mom really helped me try to navigate what I wanted to do. And so I went the education route, and my relationship with children is way better. They look forward coming to school. Mm-hmm. And I think that also really healed like the elementary part that I didn't have as a child, you know, moving to the suburbs. And so, yeah, that's really what I did to do to like become an educator. Mm-hmm. Those were the steps that I took. Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to be that teacher in your students' lives. They're like, I'm excited to go to Ms. Gutierrez's class. Like, yeah. I feel supported. I feel loved, even if they're not getting that at home.
Mm-hmm. And I make it a point, you know, a lot of my students and my experience in the past will have had a teacher that has really hurt their self-esteems, like, oh, my teacher said I can't do this, I'm not good at this. And I'm like, honey, you have to reframe your thinking. You can do it. We just have to find a way that's going to work best for you. And so when you say that, it really makes them feel like you're in their corner and you want them to do better. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of things because advocating for me as a child was very difficult. I was very quiet. I didn't want to ask for help because a lot of my peers weren't doing that. And I make it a point that my kids are comfortable saying, I don't get it, mm-hmm. or I need help. And so we have something called data chats where I pull them individually. Mm-hmm. We go over grades, things that they are doing well in, and then things that we can improve on. And at first the kids were very like confused. They're like, Ms. Gutierrez, why are you asking me what you could do? And I'm like, because I can always become better at my job. And there's things that I might not notice that you need help in. And they really look forward to that individual time with me. Mm-hmm. And it just builds a very safe environment and a very safe learning environment. Mm-hmm. When I have a student say, I don't understand it, Ms. Gutierrez, not only can I help, but then their peers around them might explain it in a way better that would make them understand the concept. Mm-hmm. So everyone's willing to help. Kids just get up and they go help when we have like group work time. And it's just a really amazing thing to see in the classroom. Yeah. And it's just, it makes them closer together. So like it makes us like a little family mm-hmm. in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Really fostering that independence and autonomy mm-hmm. in your students.
Yeah.
What would you say to any parents that are listening with the child, if they have a child that has ADHD, or recently diagnosed, you know, what can they do to advocate for their child in the education system?
So in my experience, I have open communication with parents 24/7. I make it a point to meet with all of my parents individually. And I want parents to know that just because your child is diagnosed with ADHD does not mean your child cannot be successful in the classroom. We just have to be flexible. And it's a trial and error. So something might work this year that I do that might not work next year for your child. And that is okay. And just take enjoyment of the process and make sure that if you're not okay, if you're noticing your child regress, let your teacher know, because most likely she will find other ways, or he will find other ways, to support your child and to make sure that your child is receiving the education mm-hmm. that they need to be successful. I mean, education isn't just one straight line. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not linear, and I tell my parents that all the time. It's my job to make sure that your child is learning the best way they can. So if they need manipulatives, if they need to read it out loud, I want them to do that now so that the following year they feel confident in their learning skill. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of extra support within the community. So I always try to involve the guidance counselor mm-hmm. because there's only so much I can do in the classroom. And for a parent, they might feel like they've done something wrong, that their child was diagnosed with ADHD. And it's sometimes the first time, like their first child. And so maybe having the parent have extra support, meeting other parents that have gone through the process, getting ideas, talking with those parents, how they can help at home, what the teacher can do, what worked for their kid, what didn't. I think it just makes a better community, and the child feels very supportive, mm-hmm. that they know that their teacher and parents get along, mm-hmm. that they both want the absolute best for their child. Mm-hmm. And so those are some things that the parents could do.
Definitely, kind of involving that collectivistic approach that's so strong in our Hispanic community. Mm-hmm. What are some tools that the schools offer for children who might need longer testing times or different approaches?
So with ADHD, when a child comes diagnosed, we offer something called a 504. And what that basically is it offers accommodation. So kids can have extra time on assignments, completing assignments, shortened assignments. So let's say we have a 10-question test. If I can find that these 5 questions hit all the standards, I can take out those 5 questions for that student. Mm-hmm. Preferential seating, so the child can sit in the front or in the back. Mm-hmm. In my experience, the front did not work for me because mm-hmm. I was always distracted what was going behind me. So if I notice that my student who has ADHD is constantly turning around or wondering what their peer is doing next to them, I sit them in the back, because then that way they have a whole view of what's going on in the classroom. Mm-hmm. We have allowable test items and test questions. Mm-hmm. And then we monitor that. So if we don't see that the 504 is working for that student, which is okay, we move on to something called an IEP, which is an individualized education plan. And that's where the student not only receives support from me, but an ESC teacher that will come in, give that student one-on-one attention, and really hound in on the gaps that that student needs to fill for the next year. Mm-hmm. And so those are the things that mm-hmm. are offered in the school system.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like a lot of parents know about that?
I do, yes. There is a stigma around 504s and IEPs. A lot of parents don't want their child labeled. Mm-hmm. I think growing up with me, in my experience, it's like not a good look. And I've been really trying to change that thought with my parents. It's okay if your child needs extra help. I always tell my parents, you're giving your child the gift of time. There's nothing wrong with your child needing a little more time to complete something. Because mm-hmm. in the real world, I mean, if we need help, we ask in the workforce. Mm-hmm. You know, taking a test isn't, you know, we're spitting out our knowledge onto a paper. Whereas if we need to get something done, or if we aren't unsure, we go ask our coworkers. Mm-hmm. And so having those pieces for your child in their education is really crucial, especially mm-hmm. at a younger age, because most times they end up exiting the program by middle school mm-hmm. if it's caught early enough. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, that's also okay. An IEP or 504 follows them into college. And colleges do have to follow it. And it also can be followed within the workforce. Mm-hmm. And it all comes back to advocating. So for parents advocating, students being comfortable using their voice, mm-hmm. and realizing how powerful their voice is and advocating for themselves mm-hmm. as well.
What are some specific barriers that you see specifically for the Hispanic community when it comes to advocating for their children, you know, in the education system?
So I think there's two things. I think, you know, in my experience, I work with first-gen parents. Mm-hmm. So they are unaware of what ADHD even is. Mm-hmm. Education, I think, is very important. And I also think, you know, when we speak with our coworkers, we use a lot of terminology that we're used to. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to use terminology that the parents are used to and used to hearing. Mm-hmm. That way that they're able to relate to how that they can help their child, as well as a lot of the parents that I work with or that come to my school are essential workers. So they don't have the flexible hours to come during school hours when I work to meet with me. And that could be the barrier, because they do really want to help. They just are unable to due to the jobs that they have.
Mm. I see very similar barriers with access to therapy and psychiatry. Mm-hmm. And I know, like with Elite DNA, having psychiatry and therapy in the same place, we want to be convenient for the community,
right.
because it's the same exact thing, right? And becoming more flexible with our hours so that children can receive care and so that they can be successful in the classroom. So how do you advocate for mental health services as a teacher for your students and their parents?
So when we come in with a diagnosis, like I said prior, we have the guidance counselor involved. That way it creates that open communication for parents mm-hmm. to feel supportive, to know what's out there for them, and to know what we're doing for their child. And then that way, of course, if, you know, if there's external problems, that the parents have a safe place to go mm-hmm. and to ask for the support that they might need themselves to be able to help their child as well. Because we have school time, which is structured, right? And then we have unstructured time, which is at home. Mm-hmm. So it's two different environments. And so I could say to my parents, hey, so-and-so had a hard time concentrating today. Here are some of the things that I've noticed. Do you notice this at home? And most parents don't typically end up seeing that, because at home is unstructured time. Kids are able to play freely, are able to do things. And so it's trying to find that common ground with both parents and I. Okay, what are some things that we can both implement at home and in the classroom that will make the transition time, the transition between home and school, easier for your child? Mm-hmm. And so when I create that open communication with my parents, it's just they just thrive. Mm-hmm. And it creates a good environment for the child and the parent as mm-hmm. well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Mm-hmm. And when we look at ourselves, even not just students, right, we have something called a wellness wheel. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we're hitting every single point of it. And emotional wellness is a part of that, and receiving that support. And I also encourage any therapists that are listening to connect with educators if possible. You know, signing releases of information to talk to the teacher about, you know, the child's progress in therapy and vice versa, because that is getting the whole picture. Same thing with having parents involved in therapy, very similar to the classroom setting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So again, like you mentioned, having a team approach.
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like if you don't have that team approach, it just becomes very disorganized. Mm-hmm. And you know, we all have an end goal. We want the child to succeed and to ultimately love school. I mean, they're at school 8 hours a day. I see my students more than their parents see their kids. So to be able to always know that have the kids even understand, okay, Ms. Gutierrez talks to my mom. She knows what we're learning. If my mom has a question, like that communication constantly going back and forth makes the child feel really uplifted mm-hmm. and, you know, just makes a good educational experience for them as they continue their mm-hmm. Process to all the way through college.
Mm-hmm. What is one last thing that you want our listeners to know about maybe a misconception about ADHD or learning, just something for them to take away?
It is a process, and to be patient with that process. Mm-hmm. Just because one thing worked for someone else's child does not mean it has to work for yours. Mm-hmm. When you find what works, it will be the best thing, but just enjoy the process. At least try to. It could be very frustrating, and it's allowed to feel that way. And you'll have some regress steps back, and you'll have some steps forward, mm-hmm. but the process is what will get you to the end point. And everything you try is worth trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super important. And how I always tell my patients that ADHD really is a superpower.
Yeah.
You know, and I also have ADHD, and I always think about it like, you know, Spider-Man, like he just has to figure out how to use his powers.
Yeah.
Some trial and error there, right?
Yeah.
Like if you've watched the movie, but that's just how I try to picture it and reframe it, because mm-hmm. it's not like a death sentence, right? It doesn't mean that we're stupid or we're not going to be successful. We just kind of got to hone in on our superpower.
You have to find your power, right, and what you're good at. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Well, thank you so much for being a positive impact in our education system.
Thank you.
And I really hope that listeners connect with your story.
Thank you for having me.